So hello and welcome back to the Metaphysical Podcast. This is episode 9, and today I have a special guest here, Dr. Penny Sartori, who wrote the book The Wisdom of Near-Death Experiences. Hello, Penny.
Hi, Victoria.
Hello, how are you?
Very good, thanks. Very excited to be here.
Oh, we are so excited to have you here. I read your book and I was fascinated by how scientific and at the same time how personal the book was. I think that it all came from your own personal experiences, if I get the right impression. How did you start working with and researching near-death experiences?
Well, it all began really with looking after a man who was clearly dying, and it was on a night shift, and I made a connection with that man, and I described that in depth at the beginning of the book.
Yes.
And I think it was that connection, because I almost felt as if I'd swapped places with this man and I could understand what he was going through. And it made me question what happens when we die. And there were no nursing courses available at the time to kind of help me to deal with this. And this case made me really, really upset, and it really sent me into a bit of a depression. And I came very close to giving up nursing at that point. But then I thought, well, I can do two things. I can either give up or I could do something about it.
Yes.
And so I started reading about death. And that's when I came across near-death experiences. And I'd never really heard of them. When I reflected back, I think when I was a student nurse, I'd seen various different things. But they'd never really sort of registered with me in some way, because I think I had preconceptions about these experiences. You know, as far as I was concerned, things like this were just sort of some sort of hallucination. But the more I read about near-death experiences, the more interested I became.
Mm.
And of course, because I was working in the intensive care unit, I thought, well, this is an ideal place to do my own research. And so once I had that idea, it kind of just went from there. And I was lucky enough then to do the UK's first long-term prospective study of near-death experiences at the intensive care unit where I worked. And that involved interviewing all of the survivors of critical illness to see if they'd had any experience at all. So that went on for 5 years with the data collection. And then it took me 3 years to analyse and write up the results. And I think it took me about 5 years to get over it, because it was quite exhausting as well.
I bet. And you were continuing doing your work as a nurse, weren't you?
Yes, that's right. So yes. I think my PhD just kind of like, it just took over everything. You know, I was doing it constantly, but it was so interesting to me. It didn't seem like I was having to do hard work, you know, because it fascinated me that much.
What made you convinced that these experiences were not hallucinations after all?
Well, I think spending time with the people who had had these experiences, mm-hmm. and in particular, there was one experience that occurred to this man who I was looking after at the time. Now, when he was unconscious, I didn't realise he was having a near-death experience.
Yes.
It was only when he regained consciousness later and described everything that had happened, and he watched it all from an out-of-body perspective, and he very accurately described the actions of myself, the consultant, and which he identified which consultant had examined him, although he hadn't seen him previously that day.
Mm.
He also described the actions of the physiotherapist, and everything that he described was completely accurate. And I know that because I was present at the time this was happening. Now, what I couldn't understand was that this man was deeply unconscious, yet he was describing a heightened state of awareness.
Mm.
Now, if consciousness is produced by the brain, how could that be possible?
Yes.
Because, you know, I've nursed thousands and thousands of patients who've been unconscious. And very often when they regain consciousness, they're disorientated,
mm.
they're a little bit confused, or some of them just have no memory at all of what's happened. Yet this man was very clearly describing events that actually did happen. So I think actually being present during that experience really convinced me that this is something that I really needed to take a lot more seriously.
Yes, yes. So you came to the similar conclusion, like I think many of scientists today, that we have to change our paradigm that our consciousness is not a product of the brain as we assumed.
Yes, now that is the only logical way that I can explain these experiences. Now, if we think that consciousness is produced by the brain, first of all, there's no known mechanism as to how that consciousness arises from the brain.
Yes.
And this is the hard problem of consciousness. The philosopher, Professor David Chalmers, has discussed this at length. And I think if we try and explain near-death experiences from this perspective, we will never have a proper full explanation of them. Now, if we look at near-death as consciousness as being mediated through the brain, well, that gives us a different understanding. And the conclusions that I've come to as a result of doing my research and my doctoral study is that perhaps consciousness is primary and that it's around us all the time, constantly, but we're not aware of it because our brain, in some way, acts like a filter and it screens out this consciousness. But there are times in our life when that filter action relaxes a bit or it doesn't have such a strong hold, and then because that brain, that filter action is relaxed, this heightened state of awareness is allowed into our everyday reality. And I think that is what is happening during a near-death experience. The brain is becoming slightly dysfunctional, so that filter action is relaxing and allowing that heightened state of awareness.
Yes.
So, you know, that is what makes most sense for me. And I think
absolutely.
It really does. And, you know, there's other aspects of these experiences where they can be accessed as well, when the brain sort of relaxes a bit. Like some people take some plant medicines such as ayahuasca, or there's drugs like LSD. And although they're different experiences, there are similarities as well. So maybe these are slightly different routes to accessing this altered state of reality.
Yes, they also change the filter, these things, don't they?
Yes, that's right.
It's quite interesting what you're saying, because it so resonates with a lot of shamanic tradition where they talk about assemblage points.
Yes.
Similarly to your filter, that our perception is tuned into a particular point, a particular focus point that can be shifted through different experiences like drugs, like different altered states of consciousness, out-of-body experiences, near-death experiences. So it's been known to humanity for a long time. But I think we have the chance now to scientifically study it, which is so fascinating.
Yes.
What happened to your patients? I'm really interested to know more about people who go through a near-death experience. How does that change their lives? How deep does that experience go?
Oh, no, the experience can be profoundly life-transforming, and it can cause all sort of disruptions as well. You know, these experiences we hear are lovely and pleasant, but they also have like a bit of a downside in some respects, because it does take them a long time to understand the experience and to fully integrate it into their life. So, for example, after an experience, the person's values can drastically change. So if they were previously very materialistic or maybe high earners and working long hours, all of a sudden things like money and status have no importance in their life anymore. So and some people actually go from having very high paid jobs to leaving their job and to becoming something like a carer or training as a nurse.
Yes.
So it can have really profound effects, you know. And these effects as well, very often they become more tolerant of other people and more loving towards people. They become more compassionate as well. And some people actually become do a lot of voluntary work with the dying after their experience as well. They usually have absolutely no fear of death. Now, that's not to say that they want to die, but they say that when it's their time, they know what to expect because they've already been there, and they know that it's a wonderful experience, and when the time is right, they will not be afraid. And I can remember one man in particular, you know, he had this experience experience, and it was so overwhelming for him. He kept coming back and forth to the intensive care unit after he'd been discharged to the ward to tell me it time and time again how wonderful it was. And I can remember I went up to visit him on the ward, and he was going around all of the patients and chatting with them and explaining that don't be afraid of anything. And he really kind of raised the mood of the other patients as well, you know, whereas previously yes. quite down and depressed, he gave them hope in some way through what he was sharing with them.
And, I guess it's yes.
And another thing that with these the changes that people undergo as well is that it can also affect their family members and their relationships as well, because that change is so drastic. Their family or their partners no longer recognise them. So, in fact, after an experience, there has been reports of quite a high divorce rate as well.
I can imagine that.
Yeah, so there's huge changes, you know.
I guess you can qualify these things as a spiritual emergency case. You know, when if one person is growing very quickly or undergoes such profound transformation, it doesn't mean that a family member is willing to go with the person and then they live apart.
Yes, that's right. And very often, because it's such a transcendent experience.
Yes.
And so for someone who hasn't had the experience, they kind of have no understanding of it at all. And so that the changes that the person undergoes then with their values and how they live their life all of a sudden is very different. And so their partner no longer kind of has anything in common with them.
Yeah, that's why your work and people who research that, I think, is so important, because it gives an educational background for not just the people who experience near-death experiences, but also their family members. I think maybe their attitude would change if they would maybe find a little leaflet in hospital, or they would be able to go to a workshop or a support group where also the family members would learn that this is not something weird, this is not something strange, but it's something that is likely to happen if someone clinically dies.
Yes, definitely.
Are there actually support groups or something like that in the UK at the moment?
Well, it's interesting that you mention this because a few years ago I was contacted by a lady who had a near-death experience in hospital, and it really did profoundly affect her, and it motivated her to want to help other people as well, because she couldn't find anyone at the time to help her understand her own experience.
Yes.
She knew that there was a need and that there were other people out there as well. And so she's actually set up a support group, and it's based in London, and they meet, I think it's the first Sunday of every month.
Yes.
And there is a website, and it's www.neardeathexperienceuk.com, I think it is.
Yes.
And that's set up by a lady called Gigi. So the meetings are growing. They've only been going since last June. There's a small group that meets. And what we hope is going to happen is that this spreads out to a regional support group. So different regions within the UK will have little group meetings every month.
That's fantastic, yes.
You know, meet up and discuss their experiences. And they can meet other people who can understand what they've been through as well.
What was your experience? Were other nurses and doctors at a hospital, were they supportive of your research? Did they find it important? Was there any kind of paradigm clash?
Well, yes. In the beginning, I think people really saw it some sort of a joke, really. They didn't understand it, and they just said, oh, this is spooky kind of thing.
Yeah.
And they didn't take much notice of it. But as my research developed, so they could see how important it was. And I was very lucky because I worked with a really great team at the intensive care unit, and they were very interested. And I know at the end of my research, the doctors in particular were really quite interested. And I can remember one of the consultants stopping the ward round and describing my research to the junior doctors. And they really did take it on board, and they could see that we could benefit future patients as well. So I think, you know, that was really quite a breakthrough, really. So I was lucky to work with such a great team of people.
That sounds really encouraging. It's such good news.
Yes,
I remember I met Raymond Moody last year, and he said that people always assume that he got a lot of persecution from the medical world and a lot of doctors criticize him. And he said that was actually not true. He said there was a lot of interest from doctors. There still is a lot of interest from doctors, from nurses about his work. He said actually that the type of people who attacked him the most, they were the religious fundamentalists.
Oh, right.
They didn't want to have any kind of scientific study of what they thought was a religious thing. So
wow,
it's, that is very encouraging, yes. And I guess it must be also liberating for doctors, because if they have to tell patients that they are dying, they are just as unprepared as everybody else, aren't they?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yes. Yeah, that's probably one of the hardest things that they have to do.
Absolutely,
with it.
Absolutely.
Mm.
Yes. And there's something else that I'm really passionate and interested about is that you're saying people change their lives when they have a near-death experience like that. And at the same time, a near-death experience is something that either occurs in someone's life or it doesn't. So what about those people who didn't have personally a near-death experience but want to learn from all of this that you researched, all the cases, all the stories really that people were reporting? Is there something that you believe that we can learn from near-death experiences about the purpose of our lives, about what it means to be human and what it means to live through this life and then, you know, have a crystallized meaning maybe at the end that we take into, if there is such thing, into the non-physical reality,
yes,
into eternity
definitely.
With us, if you want to use a big word.
I think these experiences are really empowering, and they can give us all a different perspective on life. Now, when I first started doing my research, a lot of my friends and family thought I was really morbid because I was researching. But I think it's only when we start to learn about death that we really start to learn about life.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And, you know, my research has enriched me, and it's made me live my life to the full. It's given me a different perspective on life, and it's made me really enjoy life as well, because we never know when we're going to die. It can come at any time, and it's something that we tend not to think about. But
yes,
I think if we, you know, if we lived with this and had a greater understanding of death and embraced death rather than feared it, I think that can really empower our lives.
Yes.
And so, you know, what these people are telling us, these people have actually nearly died, and they've survived and come back to tell us about their experiences. And I think by familiarizing ourselves with the experiences and listening to them and speaking with people who've had an experience, that can help us to understand life, and we can learn from them without having to nearly die ourselves.
Absolutely. I do believe that we are probably the only society that treats death as such a taboo.
Yeah, you know, we tend not to think about it.
We tend to ignore it, yes.
Yeah, you know, you always think, oh, that's something that happens to other people. You read about it in the papers. And then when something happens to a loved one of our own, it's a big wake-up call.
Then it hits us, yes.
Yeah, and that was really sort of brought home to me when I worked in intensive care. Mm. You know, death is really frequent, and I would sometimes look after people who died, and sometimes you'd get about four people who would die on one shift alone.
Yes.
And you know, that person may have just left their home in the morning to go to work and had a serious accident on the way to, and that's how quick death can come.
Yeah, how enlightening to think about it. And it's really as much part of life as everything else, isn't it?
That's right, yes.
Sometimes I think we are so scared of death, and it's a little bit like little children who don't want to go to sleep in the evening.
Because
they think then they miss on all the good things. And then, of course, as we grow up, we learn that there is a next morning and we wake up again. So it's, I think, as we grow spiritually and as our consciousness grows, death is going to become a normal part of life that we can deal with in a much healthier way, hopefully.
Yes.
And where is it going now, Penny? Are you planning to do any more research? What are the questions that are the most burning or the most intriguing at the moment for you?
Quite a few aspects that I want to explore with near-death experiences. So I definitely do want to continue researching them. And one thing that particularly interests me about the experience is that some people, after having had one, develop electrical sensitivity.
And how fascinating.
Now, that really does fascinate me a lot. Some people find that they can't wear a wristwatch. It'll just stop working for them. Now, I spoke to one lady quite recently, and she said it wasn't so much that it stopped working for her, but she just didn't like the energy that she felt around her wrist when she had a watch on.
Yes.
And so strong, she's felt that she really couldn't, so she stopped wearing watches. Some people find that any kind of watch will malfunction for them, or it'll just stop working, or it'll lose time. That's a digital watch or a wind-up watch. It could be an expensive one or a cheap one. And some people I know have even taken their watches to jewellers who have found nothing wrong with it at all, and it'll work for other people. So that's that aspect. Some people find, like, electrical items like computers or kettles or toasters, they will malfunction or even blow up in their presence as well. And that is something that just fascinates me, because potentially we could quantify that by measuring the electrical
capability
of people. So I would like to do some research where I look at people who've had a near-death experience but don't have the electrical sensitivity, compare them with people who've had a near-death experience but do have electrical sensitivity, and then have a control group of people who have been near death but didn't have a near-death experience nor any electrical sensitivity. So I'd like to look at those aspects as well.
That sounds so intriguing. I was just thinking while you were speaking that this is something truly new, because among all those cultures that did have a good understanding of death, I'm talking about, for example, the ancient Egyptians or the Tibetans that did meditation and other means to actually go beyond those realms, and they have, I believe, a quite profound knowledge in these things. But of course they didn't know anything about electric fields, because there was no electricity.
That's
so
right.
Maybe this is where our science and our modern technology comes in, that we find perhaps electricity is something that is on the border of our physical reality and that reality beyond. And it's fascinating, because if you could just show that there is something, you don't necessarily have to show what is there.
Yes.
But you could show something that it's not nothing. And that would at least prove that there is something beyond death. And it can still be, you know, remain a mystery what it exactly is. But we would have a hard proof to that there is something, at least. That sounds fascinating.
Yes, absolutely it is, yes.
Yeah, because otherwise I believe these things are very hard to prove, because once we are out of the physical realm, then of course also the laws and even the logic of our world collapse, and we have to probably deal with completely different aspects.
Yes.
Well, I wish you all the best. We are very grateful that you're doing this research, and that you are so kind, and you came, and you're so kind, and you're talking to people, and you are using your own personality as well as your scientific background to study that.
Yeah, thanks.
So I wish you all the best.
Thank you.
And I hope to talk to you very soon again.
Yes, I'll keep you updated. If I do more research, I'd be more than happy to talk about that.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Bye-bye for now. Bye.
Bye-bye.